From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, and joining me on the panel this week are senior correspondent for Marketplace, Nancy Marshall Genzer, and VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Welcome, Nancy and Steve.
Hello, Kim.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, here are the issues. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken visited the Middle East to shore up the Gaza ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinian militant group Hamas. Blinken expressed hope for creating a better environment that might one day yield peace talks. Belarus President Alexander Lukashenko made his first public remarks defending his grounding of a Ryanair flight last week, accusing the West of launching a hybrid modern war and calling the backlash over the incident a planned provocation. Belarus has been accused of hijacking a European jetliner and engaging in an act of state terrorism when it forced a Ryanair flight to perform an emergency landing in Minsk after a bomb threat and arrested an opposition blogger critical of President Alexander Lukashenko. Meanwhile, U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin will hold a summit next month in Geneva, the first face-to-face meeting of the two leaders at a time when the two countries are at odds on several contentious issues. U.S. New York prosecutors have convened a grand jury to consider whether to indict former President Donald Trump and Trump Organization executives as part of a criminal investigation into the company. May 25th marked 1 year since the death of George Floyd, an African-American man who died while in the custody of Minneapolis police. Floyd's death sent millions of people around the world into the streets in some of the largest sustained protests recorded, with calls for police reform. While small changes have been made in policing policies, U.S. lawmakers continue to work on a comprehensive police reform legislation. Well, those are the issues, and let's get started. Nancy, I will start with you. What are people saying was accomplished by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's visit to the Middle East, especially in light of both Israel and Hamas claiming victory with the ceasefire?
Some people were critical of Blinken. They wanted him to speak out more forcefully in terms of a long-term peace settlement between the Israelis and Palestinians. He did not do that, and instead he kept talking about the fact that the U.S. has so far contributed $360 million in humanitarian and development aid. He said, first, you know, we just have to make sure that Palestinians who lost their houses from the Israeli bombing have a place to stay. They have food, they have health care, and then we can look at the bigger picture.
Also, Steve, Blinken met with Israeli and Palestinian leaders with the immediate aim of shoring up this ceasefire that ended 11 days of fighting between Israel and Hamas. He vowed to rally international support, as Nancy mentioned, for the effort, while also promising to ensure that none of the aid would reach Hamas. So from your perspective and reporting, what is the international community saying about this support of the U.S. effort?
Well, I think they're glad to see the United States get involved belatedly, because it really was the intention of the Biden administration not to get enmeshed in the Middle East this early in the president's administration, if at all. And of course, in the Middle East, events have a way of overtaking the best intentions of outside parties. So this administration now finds itself involved. But I think they're taking a bit of a hands-off approach. To some degree, there's no talk at this point of the United States being a real mediator in any peace talks, although, of course, people here in Washington would love to see some progress in that area. But we have a lot of experienced people in the Biden administration, and they've learned the lessons from past administrations of how getting involved in this can come back to really bite you. And so I think there still is a hesitation from the president on down to really keep the involvement at an absolutely necessary minimum at this stage.
So then what would be the next step with the ceasefire? And that can go to either one of you.
Well, I think as far as the U.S. is concerned, yeah, they don't want to get involved in big negotiations for new peace talks. And they really have said they want to just focus on reconstruction. And they want to make sure it's in partnership with the Palestinian Authority and not Hamas. Now, Blinken was asked if President Biden would consider visiting Israel in the future. And Blinken said definitely that, you know, the U.S. is a true friend of Israel. So it's kind of like they're trying to pacify both sides at this point.
Yeah, I think also if we look at how the United States is approaching a disparate problem such as what's happening on the border with Mexico, there's an attempt to try to solve the root cause, such as putting money into El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras so that people have better lives and don't feel compelled to flee to the United States. And the same thing with Gaza. You know, if people's lives are better, perhaps they'll take a more moderate approach. Perhaps Hamas will lose support vis-a-vis the Palestinian Authority, and this will reduce the radicalism. That may turn out to be a naive approach, but it is a different approach than we've seen in past administrations. So I think at least they're going to give it a shot.
And also, speaking of just the humanitarian aspect, this 11-day war in Israel, it killed more than 250 people and caused lots of heavy destruction. So what is being done at this point then to help people there?
Well, there is this donor drive that the U.S. is trying to spearhead. It did not get any commitments initially either from Jordan or Egypt, but they're trying. Now, Israel has said it will not contribute to any aid package unless the Palestinian Authority stops cooperating with this International Criminal Court investigation of war crimes in the territories occupied by Israel. So it's not clear yet exactly how much help will be going to the Palestinians.
Yeah, I think there's also a lot of concern internationally that if you do anything in Gaza, Hamas is going to be involved, even though you may put conditions on it that none of the money ends up going to Hamas.
Yes. Let's move on now to the other hot topic, and that's Belarus President Alexander Lukashenko made his first public remarks defending his grounding of a Ryanair flight last week, while Ryanair CEO Michael O'Leary accused Belarus of state-sponsored hijacking and state-sponsored piracy. When the plane landed, Roman Protasevich, a dissident journalist on board, was arrested. So what are your sources saying about this whole incident, Nancy?
Well, the White House issued a statement saying, you know, it condemns in the strongest possible terms the diversion of the plane and the removal of Protasevich, and it called it an outrageous incident and joined countries around the world calling for his release. The only really concrete thing they said they would do is Biden has apparently asked his team of economists to develop some, quote, appropriate options to hold accountable those responsible. And the Biden administration says it welcomes the news that the European Union has called for targeted economic sanctions on Belarus. So at this point, it looks like economic sanctions would be the first thing the U.S. would do here.
Right. And to add to what Nancy said, the EU did take some relatively tough action compared to what a lot of people expected they would do, which was to focus on essentially sanctioning the aviation sector of Belarus. But it is a really remarkable incident. And for Belarus to do this, basically a type of hijacking, as people call it, against a airliner coming from one EU country going to another, was a big defiance of the European Union and the norms of Western democracy. Now, Belarus knows that it has Vladimir Putin and Russia backing it up, but we should not think by any means that Belarus is just some sort of satellite of Moscow. There have been tensions between those two countries, but Belarus apparently feeling comfortable enough that it can rely on Moscow to shield it from too much fallout from this.
Yes, and also just looking at the actual journalist, the opposition in Belarus is saying that he has been beaten and in detention. Has this been confirmed, or what do we know about the status of the journalist and of his girlfriend as well, Sofia Sapega?
I think all we really know is what we can see from the video that was released along with his statement. You know, his supporters say that he was not speaking the way he normally would, that there was face powder that was designed to cover up bruises on his face. They say clearly he had been beaten and was under duress.
The same goes with the video that the girlfriend appeared in as well.
Yeah, so I guess we will just have to continue to monitor this. But what are going to be some ramifications for Belarus for doing this?
Well, the White House spokesperson, Jen Psaki, was asked, you know, whether the president has determined if Russia had any role in diverting the plane. And she said, I did not give any indication that we had that view. So I guess that means no, not yet anyway. But, you know, they're clearly trying to figure out if Russia had a role here.
In looking at Russia, a first face-to-face meeting between President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin will take place next month in Switzerland. So, Steve, what can we expect from this meeting?
Well, I think what you're going to see are public statements, both sides are talking tough, but also saying that they want to try to cooperate to resolve some of the world's problems on which they do agree. For example, really ending the coronavirus pandemic. But this is a case of two very important countries getting their leaders together early in the administration of the new U.S. president. There are many who view that the U.S. responses to what's been happening in the cyber arena with the sort of hacking and disinformation blamed on Russia, that it has been a restrained response from the United States. Republicans, of course, in Congress are attacking this meeting, saying that basically Biden is rewarding Putin for nothing. But of course, we should recall that the previous president, Donald Trump, also met with Vladimir Putin after the Russians were found to have meddled in the 2016 presidential election. So from the standpoint of diplomats, talking is always better than the alternative.
And Steve, you brought up a very good point that leads me to my next question. And Nancy, I'll throw this out to you. This meeting comes 3 years after Putin met with then President Donald Trump in Helsinki, Finland in July of 2018. So just in line with what Steve was referring to, how will this meeting be different from the July 18th meeting with then President Trump?
Well, I think the Biden administration is going to push Russia a lot more strongly on Ukraine, you know, making a big point of America's support for Ukraine's territorial integrity. And also, Biden is going to push Putin on Belarus. But the White House also says they're going to talk about things like arms control, extending the New START treaty. And that's not something that the Trump administration made a lot of progress on. Also, the White House says, you know, as far as are you rewarding Putin for bad behavior? The White House says, you know, we don't just meet with people when we agree. It's important to talk with people when we're having disagreements with them.
That is true. That's a very good point. So let's take a short break. And when we return, we will look at a new development regarding former President Donald Trump and the calls for police reform in the U.S. Issues in the News is coming to you from Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype. Senior Correspondent for Marketplace, Nancy Marshall-Genzer, and VOA White House Bureau Chief, Steve Herman. Well, Steve, U.S. New York prosecutors have convened a grand jury to consider whether to indict former President Donald Trump and Trump Organization executives as part of a criminal investigation. So what prompted this latest development, and what do prosecutors hope to achieve?
This has been years in the making. There has been tremendous scrutiny of the Trump Organization, his taxes. Some of the people that were very close to him, lawyers and accountants, have been brought in for multiple interviews. And we have the Manhattan District Attorney's Office and the New York State Attorney General that have essentially now combined forces, teamed up, to really see whether there is something that they can take to prosecution. So this has shifted from a civil investigation now to a prosecution with a grand jury being convened. That is very serious. Almost all the time when these grand juries sit, they do return something that prosecutors can then charge a crime with. So we've heard a lot over the years about bad behavior from President Trump, but this is perhaps at this point the most serious legal jeopardy that he is facing. Of course, the former president, who is banned from social media now but is still putting out Twitter-length press releases from Mar-a-Lago, calls this a witch hunt and points to anti-Trump comments that had been made by the New York Attorney General in the past. But it does look like we're headed to some sort of indictment. And whether that actually ends up naming Donald Trump, we don't know yet. But that would be historic, because we've never had a president or a former president charged with a crime.
And also, Nancy, just as Steve said, Trump did say this is a continuation of the greatest witch hunt in American history. It began the day I came down the escalator in Trump Tower, and it's never stopped. He is denying any wrongdoing regarding his finances, but with it now being a criminal investigation, is there anything else the prosecutors are looking for other than some of his business dealings? Some people out there saying, well, they're just trying to do anything they can to prevent him from running for president again.
Well, this all started with Michael Cohen, Trump's former lawyer, who, of course, pleaded guilty to making hush money payoffs before the 2016 election to women who said they had affairs with President Trump years earlier. And there are these two investigations. The crux of them appears to be whether Trump tried to mislead both banks and the IRS with the banks by inflating the value of his properties to try to get a bigger loan, and with the IRS by deflating the value of his properties to try to pay less in taxes. That appears to be the core of the investigation. I don't think there's any new charge here, but just trying to substantiate these charges that have been floating around for years now.
Yeah, we should mention that in 20th century American history, when the government was trying to go after certain notorious people such as gangster Al Capone, it was lack of paying proper taxes that eventually was their downfall. So we do say in this country, do not mess with the IRS. They have their own sort of tax court system, and they have a very high rate of winning prosecutions. So that is something that former president should be really worried about.
That is a very good point. And also, just looking at the grand jury, how long does it usually take for them to determine whether to indict someone?
This panel is going to sit for 3 days a week for 6 months. So we may have to wait until later on this year. And they may not be asked to issue an indictment. This just could be the prosecutors trying to subpoena witnesses and using the grand jury to do that.
Okay, so we'll just continue to follow developments with this story. Well, May 25th was the one-year anniversary of the death of George Floyd, a man who was killed in police custody in Minneapolis, Minnesota. As the nation honored his life with memorial events and marches, Floyd's family and supporters said they have been encouraged by the progress made in the year since he was killed. Some small reforms have been made, but what are the issues that are keeping lawmakers from passing legislation on police reform here in the U.S., Steve?
Well, I think we need to take a step back and look at more the style of this than the substance. For the Republicans who are looking at very important elections for the House of Representatives, which they want to try to retake in 2022, this is really red meat. And to put out the message to their base, and hopefully what they're saying is they want to widen their base by painting the Democrats and the White House as anti-police. Of course, the White House would say that's not their position whatsoever. But they're going to fight this tooth and nail, because it is a major piece of the platform that the Republicans will have for next year's elections, saying that, aha, look at these Democrats in the White House. They want to undermine the police, and crime is going up under the Biden administration, although this started under the Trump administration. And it's all because the White House and the Democrats are soft on supporting the police.
Also, President Biden, he initially set the goal of a bill passing by May 25th. And he did meet with some of Floyd's family members on that date. And just in light of what Steve was just saying, Nancy, is there more pressure now on Congress to get the bill passed? And I also wanted to mention that Cedric Richmond, a Biden's senior advisor, and even some members of Floyd's family told CNN this week, it's more important to have meaningful legislation than to meet a deadline or timeline.
Yeah, the legislation is hung up over the question of whether police officers could be sued. And there's one compromise in the works that would allow people to essentially sue police departments, but not individual police officers. So that's the hang up with the legislation. You know, Jen Psaki, the White House spokeswoman, said that President Biden is open to negotiations, but she wouldn't commit to what his position is on that in particular.
We should note that the White House, as opposed to the previous administration, has really been supportive of those who are trying to get something done in terms of targeting violence committed by police against minorities. A very poignant scene at the White House with the daughter of George Floyd in the Oval Office. And President Biden feels this deeply personally. And this is going to be front and center for the administration. I don't think they're going to cave in to the Republican pressure. And we should also note that there is some bipartisan support for a police reform bill. But whether in this era of extreme polarization and everybody having their eyes on a congressional election next year, whether we will get anything substantive accomplished remains to be seen.
Just in looking at over this past year, there have been calls by some, even some of the protesters, calling for defunding the police. So where does the Biden administration stand on this?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, policing is so local. So trying to control local police departments would be like trying to herd cats. But one thing this legislation does is it requires local and state police agencies to use federal fundings for certain things, or they don't get the money. That's about the only power they have financially. So, for example, the bill would require the departments to use federal money to ensure the use of body cameras. And, you know, if they want grants from the Justice Department, they have to prove that their practices by their prosecutors are fair, prohibit racial and religious profiling. So all these things that they would, these thresholds they would have to meet in order to get federal funding.
And there's a lot that they can do with this administration outside of legislation. They have control of the Justice Department, which is going to be obviously much more aggressive in going after abuses by police and violations of civil rights than the previous administration.
And in fact, the administration is calling for more funding for the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division, millions of dollars more. So that's very true.
As we're talking about police reform, I'd also like to touch on gun violence. And just to mention another recent multiple shooting that occurred this week in San Jose, California, where multiple people were killed and wounded in a shooting at a light rail yard. The shooting is the most recent in an onslaught of gun violence in the U.S. So as we're looking here to wrap up the show, what are both of your thoughts in general on these tragic occurrences? And where are lawmakers in the passing of legislation to reduce gun violence?
Well, the Senate is so closely divided, unless with the filibuster, they've got to get at least 60 votes in favor of any gun control legislation. And there's just not the support for that. And even Democrat Joe Manchin from West Virginia has been lukewarm on gun control. And it just doesn't seem to matter how many shootings we have like this. The support just isn't there.
Yeah, and you just had this week action in Texas to make it easier for someone to carry a gun. It's a red state, blue state divide. Again, it is a big issue for the Republicans to not be seen as supporting further restrictions on guns because of the support among their base for the Second Amendment.
And we will have to end the show on that note. Thanks to our panelists, Senior Correspondent for Marketplace, Nancy Marshall Genzer, and VOA White House Bureau Chief, Steve Herman. I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for joining us for Issues in the News.